Hello and thanks for tuning in. Starling Bank has taken what seems like an unusual step in how it adds AI-powered functionality. And I've invited Frédéric Laurent, Deputy Chief Information Officer at Starling Bank, to discuss what it has been doing. Okay, Fred, so what is Starling Bank actually doing with AI in this particular story?
So in this particular moment, Starling Bank is launching a feature called Smart Tools, which are part of the Starling Assistant. And really, it's the fruit of, I would say, all of the customer-facing AI developments we've done over the last 18 months. And really, essentially, that journey follows what the AI industry at large has been able to develop from a tech point of view. We started with spending intelligence, which was natural language processing was the base LLMs. Then, the AI companies added multimodal capabilities. So we created scam intelligence, which can take a picture and decide whether there are some red flags around relating to fraud. Then they added reasoning. So we created the Starling Assistant. And then the industry seemed to have coalesced a lot around that concept of skills, which is a way of telling an AI model how to perform a task through a succession of steps that you've essentially encoded.
I mean, you've mentioned quite a lot there. So let's rewind a bit. So when you say that the industry is moving on, what industry are we talking specifically about? Because, you have the AI industry, you have the financial sector. Which industry is sort of moving at this particular rate, meaning that you have to make these changes?
Mm-hmm. This is a fair question. In that particular context, I was talking about AI, really the AI industry, not necessarily the financial services industry. And really, the point I was making is this idea that as the AI as a technology improves, and as the AI industry identifies how best to use it, we are very keen at Starling to make sure those technological advancements do not benefit just the bank, but also its customers. Hence that sequence of improvements within the AI industry and essentially the mirror within our banking application.
So if we just go back to Smart Tools, which is the story that I'm going to be writing and the story that will be written after this podcast. Now, how did that come about? I mean, I know you mentioned you've been building on other things, but there must have been a moment in time when I don't know if it was what the internal code name was, but you decided at the time, this is where we need to be heading because the industry is moving in this direction. What was that inspiration? How did that come about?
Yeah, so I guess I might not want to disclose the project code name, but because I think that, the smart tool naming, which I truly love, is not the way the project was initially called. I think the inspiration was very much coming from the, I would say, software development side of the house. So, actually quite far, I would argue, from pure financial services. And this realization that in order for our engineers to get the most out of coding agents at that point, it was useful for us to codify some of our understanding of our code bases into, say, skills or, certain activities that an engineer would do, probably once a day, again, codify it into a skill. And there was an obvious, in my role, need to work out what is the read across for our customers. So, we've deployed AI for the benefit of our engineers, we've deployed AI for the benefit of our non-tech staff, and we've deployed AI for the benefit of our customers. And every time there's something that seems to work in one area, I always try in my role and with my teams to think about what could be the read across for the other two categories. And so really, smart tools, the inspiration is that usage of skills within a coding agent context, and what does it mean for our customers, and essentially applying it to the day-to-day problems that they might face, whether it's I start university tomorrow, I want to be able to budget based on the income I have, the loan I've just taken out, and conversely, the expenditures I'm expecting to have based on, the university I'm in and the time I'm in and so on. Or if you're an SME or probably a sole trader and you're not entirely sure whether you are subject to the Make Tax Digital, let's have a skill that allow, or sorry, a smart tool that allows the sole trader to identify this quickly. And if they are eligible, if they are subject to making tax digital, then helping them with registration and also explaining to them what could happen once they are registered.
Okay, I just want to unpick some of the things you said there, Fred. Now, it is a smart tool. It's also a skill. Are you providing customers with choices, like a toolbox almost?
Yes. So so essentially they can pick the smart tools that they want to use as part of a given interaction with the styling assistant. So the idea is when they go into the styling assistant, yes, there's still the input box where they can immediately interact with the styling assistant through English, plain English. But that was from the beginning of styling assistant. But we were also, you know, I guess another reason for smart tools coming about is that concern that because it's an open-ended technology, some of our customers, we did notice a behavior of having that writer's block, you know, of, oh, it's actually, yes, it's open-ended, but I have a bit of a fear of using it. And so by adding those smart tools and giving them the choice, you're right, when they go into the styling assistant, they see a list of such smart tools and they can decide which one might be relevant to them, then it takes that writer's block away. And another nice thing around the smart tools is that you don't need to use that particular selection mechanism on the landing page of the styling assistant. They can also be triggered just based on you having a discussion with the styling assistant, and it will realize, oh, you are telling me that you might be moving to university, and just you mentioning those things could lead the styling assistant to trigger one of the smart tools here, the student budget planner.
Hmm. If customers are asking questions that are not obvious smart tools, how do you capture that so that you can develop new skills?
So there are a number of techniques around this. First, we allow our customers to, and we've done that for a long time, to submit suggestions directly from the app. Of course, they can also do it through, say, calling us if they decide to do so, or chatting with us. That's one approach, and we've received some feedback from our customers in this way. And actually, the smart tools that will be available at launch all came about through that specific mechanism. So coming from customers actually feeding back to us some of the things they would like to see within the styling assistant. That's one. Another one we can do is what we call topic modeling. So we can actually, without looking at the actual discussions between the assistant and the customer directly, we can still get tools that identify the key themes that are being discussed. And then our product teams can hypothesize as to why some of those things come about and decide on the back of it to create a new smart tool. And so some of the smart tools that will come in the future are already related to this particular technique. So, you know, there's a range of avenues to how we get those ideas. But it's primarily, you know, customer driven, because that's always been at the heart of how Starling approaches the development of its app, really.
Mm. I mean, I'm going back to what you were talking about a bit earlier in the conversation. I mean, this idea came about from the sort of software development side of the business, in terms of not having to sort of rewrite bits of code or create new functionality when stuff's there, and having skills that helped you achieve those results. I guess that's like increasing productivity for an internal gain. It does seem to me that there's you've been using AI for quite a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, since I actually joined in 2019, and we were already, before AI was, you know, mostly limited to LLM in the public psyche, we were already doing deep learning based application of deep learning within the bank.
Okay, so from then to now, that's... And we've already spoken briefly about how things change so quickly. It must be quite difficult. I mean, you're the deputy CIO, right? And it must be quite difficult just keeping abreast of what's going on, what things are worth looking at, what things aren't worth looking at, where you need to sort of raise alarm bells because things have happened, and we know things have happened in the last few weeks where everyone was raising alarm bells. My inbox is full of that sort of those stories at the moment. How do you just? There's so much going on. How do you handle that?
So I guess it's first, I would say it's a team effort, right? I'm not on my own in this. Of course, it's one of my primary responsibilities as a deputy CIO is actually specifically AI and machine learning and data. But it's not just me. It's also my teams. And I would argue also other teams within the organization. So compliance teams, for instance, as part of their compliance briefings and scanning of various regulatory considerations, do provide us on a weekly basis with very relevant items. And at this point in time, it's interesting you talked about your inbox being completely full. I would argue a very large portion of those compliance weekly letters are at this point in time about AI. And, you know, what does a regulator X, Y, or Z think about it? Or what does this particular industry association think about it? So, you know, it's a team effort. And then I guess I follow, you know, at a personal level, if that's of interest, I follow a number of, newsletter podcasts. And to your point, it's overwhelming. You have to essentially continuously be consuming those sources of information in order to stay on top. In terms of deciding what you look at, what you don't look at, I think, again, you have to go back to the collective. So there are things that catch my eye. I share it with my teams. One, my lead data scientist might find this incredibly useful, or conversely tell me, Fred, you're an idiot. This is totally not useful. Or it might be a thing that will be useful in 6 months' time, a year's time, but not now. So it's very much, I would say, a large portion of my role at this point is to keep on top of the industry, the AI industry, reading about it, hearing about it, and then, you know, it's definitely a challenge, I think, for all organizations at this point, deciding which items to focus on. And, you know, I'm sure there might have been things, opportunities we let slip, but conversely, I think we're quite happy and proud of the decisions we've made over the years, including, you know, being into the machine learning and deep learning space from as early as 2019, because I think it has set us up for, you know, the success we're seeing around the rollout of AI and in particular customer-facing AI.
Yes, yeah. Have you used AI yourself to manage that immense knowledge that's out there of all of the artificial intelligence stuff that's going on at the moment?
So I don't push it as far as having an AI helper like OpenClaw or anything like this, but I do. Any article I find, any archive, research paper I find, anything like this, I do use Notebook LM, which is a Google product. And then it kind of builds in my, I guess, an outsourced memory of this, and then I can question it directly. So partly, yes. And then, of course, you know, I think AI is an incredible tool with regards to education, and certainly getting to grasp quickly with the topic, at least the first, you know, few considerations around the topic. And so when new concepts come up, my first port of call is always to go and ask an AI model to, you know, explain it to me as if I was a 5-year-old. And then also I also ask it to give me a list of good references, because we all know that AI models can hallucinate, depending on, you know, actually nobody really knows. And therefore, I'm always keen to be able to go back to some more, I don't want to say truthful, because, you know, anyone can write a page on the internet at this point in time, but to see the source of information that backs what the agent has said, so I can also assure myself that what I'm reading and the explanations I'm seeing are valid.
Since you've been at Starling Bank, have you changed? The use of AI in the way you've just described as a, I mean, almost like an outsourced memory pool. Has that changed the way you approach new topics, new challenges?
So, I mean, definitely. I think anyone saying no, it hasn't changed the way I work, I feel like almost maybe you've missed the boat if you think it hasn't changed the way you work. So that's for sure. And maybe the way I would summarize it is, if it's a topic I have to work on a topic I really don't know anything about, a bit like I described 2 minutes ago, I think I will use AI to help me get to grips with the first few considerations around the topic, give me those links, and then I'll go and do some more reading. If I already know about a topic, what I quite like doing, and you know, I'm asked for my opinion or to make a decision, I quite like still thinking on my own, but then going to an AI and asking it the question, submitting the problem to it, and see whether it comes up with other angles and other perspectives, and then also asking it to almost contradict itself immediately after it's given me an answer, because I feel if you ask it to, you know, it gives you, because they're trained to always answer a question, they will give you some output, but again, because of that risk around hallucination, is how much credence do you put, how much weight do you put on that particular response? And so I quite like playing that game of asking okay, you've told me that, but now play the opposite role. If you needed to actually disprove this, what would you do? And it's quite interesting to see how they behave, and you know, I would say by and large these days, considering the quality of the models, they tend to still say, okay, no, I think this is fine. But there are a few, there's been a few cases where it's actually come back and said, yeah, actually, I think I haven't reconsidered this very, very properly. And actually, these are additional facts you should consider. So that's my technique. There was a period of time where I would systematically ask, and I can't remember where I picked up that suggestion, but please ask me 10 clarifying questions before you even try to answer my query. So, you know, I would give it the problem. I'd say, please ask me 10 clarifying questions and then start to answer. But funnily enough, a lot of the providers realized that this piece of advice had been doing the rounds. And so they actually incorporated it into the AI services themselves. So I seldom use it these days. But, you know, had we met probably 6 to 12 months ago, I probably would have mentioned that technique as well.
Yeah, that's really interesting, Fred. Well, thank you ever so much. I mean, I will certainly try some of those things out myself as soon as I get off the phone. Thank you very much, Fred, and thanks for tuning in. You can read the full article on www.computerweekly.com and download the podcast on iTunes and Amazon Music.